the NBA world.
The Philadelphia Eagles are...
Welcome. Hello.
And welcome.
Two cheers from the press box. I'm your host, Headphone Joe, and I'm here with my co-host, as always.
What's up, everybody? Brennan Tassif coming to you live from New York City.
Live from New York City, a hustling, bustling city, which means we have to be hustling and bustling through this episode because the boy has a full docket. So, without any further ado, let's get right into the big topics.
Ready to return the opening kickoff. Perfect way to kick off.
Timothy Chalamet was robbed. Oh, I'm sorry. You said big topics.
Big topics. Those are the biggest topics, but just big topics. Brennan, your C's, like Timothy Chalamet, were robbed of a victory over the Cleveland Cavaliers. I don't think Timmy was robbed, by the way. I think Coleman Domingo was robbed. Your C's were robbed of a victory over the Cavs. Now, did you have a chance to put eyes on this game?
I did not.
Okay, so the game flow was very, very interesting, and a lot of people started getting chesty, and I started feeling like, dang, I just talked all that shit last week saying I think the C's can win it, and now they're getting embarrassed in front of, like, everybody. Because to start the game, the Celtics were up 22-3 or something. Something just insane.
Yeah.
And, like, a timeout was called, and Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown are, like, shouting at the crowd, and they're gesturing, and they're like, we own this. We're the guys. And then they got walked down, like,
yeah, I heard
Drake
about it. I didn't see
by Kendrick
it.
Lamar. They got walked down and punked, and the C's ended up taking the Cavs. They're both C teams. It's very confusing. The Cavs ended up winning this behind a 41-point performance from Donovan Mitchell. I think this is the second or third time the Cavs have beat them. Oh, they've played all their season series, and it's a split, 2-2. So do you think a game like this, especially like this, the last one they'll play until potentially seeing each other in the postseason, and the way in which the Celtics got up, got very chesty, very bloviating a lot, and then having to walk out of the arena with their tail tucked between their legs. Because mind you, this game was in the Garden, the TD yep. Garden, that is. Do you think this will psychologically play a factor in a postseason matchup between these two?
So I do twofold, though. I think it's good that the C's got walked down like this because they're not going to be as overly confident going against the Cavaliers. But also it shows the Cavaliers like this is nothing. Like, we can beat this team. Like, this team isn't the big bad boogeyman that everyone said it was going to be at the beginning of the season because they're bringing everybody back. Oh, watch out. Here we go. You know, back to back. And then the Cavaliers were like, well, wait a second. Excuse me a moment. If I could have a moment of your time. I think this one bodes well for the Cavaliers because they're not afraid of Boston. But I think it does something for Boston in the sense of, like, hey, you guys got to stay laser focused. You got to stay locked in, or else this could get away from you very quickly. Plus, Boston has they have a few bigs. I mean, I'm thinking mainly Porzingis and Horford, who's only playing like 15 minutes a game.
Yeah, Porzingis missed this game. I do want to note that.
Yeah, but they have, I mean, Cleveland's young. They've got size. They've got Donovan. Like, I think they're going to be okay. I think this is going to come down to game seven. The only thing is, game seven is going to be in Cleveland.
Yes. So yes, that is a huge factor there.
I think that, I mean, I know we talk about the lack of home court advantage and home field advantage now in the major sports, but I think that's actually going to play into it. I think this is a bigger win for the Cavaliers in a long-term postseason sense than a worse loss for the Boston Celtics.
All right. Well, moving along, Brennan, great analysis there. Do you have anything for me having to do a mea culpa? You know, sometimes you can't foresee something until you see something, right? and boy, was I wrong. I thought the Lakers would trade for Luka. You know, they didn't have the size. They didn't have the defense. They would flounder trying to figure it out. This is more of a long-term play than a right-now play. They're on a six-game winning streak coming out of All-Star Weekend. And they're number two in the Western Conference right now, tied with the Nuggets. They are currently up just on percentages because I believe they've played two less games than us in total. They beat us a part of this run. I kind of poo-pooed that when it happened last week. But no, they seem to be a legitimate threat. And I said they were going to be a legitimate threat in the West. I said they're going to be a top four team. And honestly, they could I can see them in the Western Conference final, if not the final. But I did not see it clicking this quickly, this fast. Some of these games have been close. They played the Clippers close the other day. They had a close game with the Mavs, sans no Lively, no Gafford, no Anthony Davis. But at the end of the day, wins go in the wins column, and we don't really look at, you know, the margin of victory. It's great to have a, you know, big margin of victory, but when it comes down to it, a win by one is the same as a win by 12. It's a win either way. So what do you foresee with these Lakers? Do you think they are now the team to beat? Do you think they are the gold standard, even though their jerseys are now more yellow than gold? Let me know.
So I'm actually going to pull in the reins a little bit and say maybe you're making this mea culpa a little too early. I think, as we say all the time with rookie quarterbacks, wait till we get some film with LeBron and Luka. You know, wait till some teams have a chance to kind of dissect what's going on with LeBron and Luka. The fact is they're too small, and they're not small like Golden State, like we touched on last week. Golden State with some of the greatest shooting of all time in the history of the NBA, so we can play small, small. They're just small. And I think especially when the postseason hits, that there's going to be wear and tear. That's going to take a toll.
I'd say they're not small. They just are not big. Like LeBron is 6'9". I think Rui's like 6'8", 6'9". Their only big right now is Jackson Hayes, who's slight. He's more tall man than big man, as Bomani likes to say. I think he's coming in at 6'11", but he's very slight. And then Luka, I think I discovered on the show, I thought he was 6'8", and he's more 6'6", 6'7", than 6'8". So they got a lot of size, but they don't have height. Like they have guys who are kind of can like amorphously play 2 through 4, but they don't have like a 5.
Yeah. And I think that'll be a big deal. I mean, we saw with OKC last year, we kept talking about it. Rebounds, rebounds, rebounds. I think in the postseason, when teams have a chance to dissect the LeBron-Luka, when we get more film on the LeBron-Luka pairing, and I think also in the playoffs, when it comes to rebounding and defense, I think that's going to play into it. And again, I'm not poo-pooing them. We saw how they beat Denver. They just put 4 in the paint, and we're like, all right, Joker, you figure it out. And I think, like we talked about then, and we'll talk about now, I think in a 7-game series, best of 4, I think they'll be able to figure it out. I honestly do think like the teams like Denver can figure it out. I think OKC with Chet coming back and with some of the size that they installed with the guy from the Knicks.
Hartenstein.
I think they'll be better off. I don't think it's – I mean, I know they've won these 6 games, but I don't think it's a clear cut like, watch out. I think this is very similar to something we see in the NFL a lot with like the Cardinals. When they go, like they open the season and they're like 6-0, and everyone's like, watch out. And then they fall off. Like, I think this is very similar. Luka gets there, doesn't play well in the first couple weeks. After the All-Star break, he's in there. They're turning and burning, and everyone's like, watch out. And I'm just like, well, let's give it a second. As Mike Wilbon wants to say, let's wait and see.
I think the biggest question mark, because they have Luka playing, you know, defense. I won't say like great defense, but they have him playing defense, which is a great improvement, but it'll be interesting to see when, you know, bad habits may rear their head, because we saw last year in the finals, and it's the final. That's the thing that I think is always going to be a conundrum for me. In the finals, he didn't play defense. Like, he played poor defense. He was complaining to the refs. He was lackadaisical in points, like looking for the bench to help him out or the refs to help him out. And he just wasn't giving maximum effort. So maybe, and I figured, if the finals isn't going to be the thing to pull it out of you, why would a trade? But maybe that's the light he needed under his ass, and that's the thing that's going to propel him into a new stratosphere. Maybe he's seeing how LeBron is giving effort, and you know, some of that stuff that I thought was more so going to permeate from now to the offseason into next year is permeating right now, and he's just playing with a freedom and a vitriol, like a venom. You know, maybe he's turning into his own variation of the Black Mamba. You know, when Kobe got more hissing, ragey, that's when he kind of like ascended into his like his own as a solo performer after Shaq. So maybe that is what we're seeing with Luka to some degree. I don't know. It's going to be very interesting. The Lakers are going to be good, which is going to be good for the league. Go ahead.
No, I want to piggyback on that because this is a kind of a loosey-goosey analogy, but I think it really fits. I see this all the time in sobriety. Like people come in and they're like, I'm never doing this again. I'm all for it. They're reading the big book. They get a spot and they're like, I'm all gung ho. And then a month or two later, you know, bad habit, like to your point, bad habits start to set back in. And then we're all looking around like, hey, what happened to so-and-so? They were like, thumping on the table being like, you guys are doing this wrong. I know the right way. Like I'm doing it right. And I think
a little holier than now.
Yeah, exactly. And I think maybe, I don't know, because we don't know this about Luka. To your point, he didn't even play defense in the finals. So yeah. I don't know if he has the constitution to keep this up. I think maybe this is a fuck you. You want to trade me? Watch this. I think this is a whole like that scene from The Bear. You know, fuck you. Watch this. But I don't think he's the kind of guy who's going to keep this going. I don't think he has that mentality because he always comes in out of shape, because he insists on going out and partying, because he's drinking sweet tea at practice. Like, I don't think he has that in him. So I think this is a good stretch. But again, to my point, I think when the time for the playoffs come, he's not getting some calls. LeBron is. All of a sudden, it's woe is me. Screw this. Screw you guys. Screw the NBA sort of a thing. So I honestly, I don't know. But if I had to gamble on it, I would say more that than the other.
All right. Moving along. Podcast P is no longer podcasting. Joel Embiid is shut down for the rest of the season. We kind of touched on this last week with like what should the Sixers do. But with shutting Joel down for the rest of the year, I believe he's either this is the first year of his new contract or the contract kicks in next year. What do they do? Like, where is up from here?
This is a six-person draft, really. This is kind of a six-player draft. It's a good draft, but like the top six are kind of where everyone's leaning.
I've heard top three is like
even like, better because if Joel sits and they still don't get a top 3-6 pick, they're totally fucked.
Oh no, I think what it is they have top six protected.
Oh, is that what it is?
I think that's what it is. That's okay, what I'm thinking.
Okay, so that
of.
Makes more sense. That's why people are talking about the sixth pick. So if they end up falling to the seventh and then they don't get, that's why, okay. Because it is a deeper draft, if they end up falling to the seventh and don't get to keep that pick, it's going to be a disaster. We called this, I know you're an Eagles fan, but I have a lot of just diehard Philly fans in my life. And a lot of them are on that same bandwagon, that same boat of like, we just won the Super Bowl. We don't really care what's going on with the Sixers sort of a thing. But this has ramifications long term, and we're going to talk about it with the next topic. But Joel doesn't seem very tradable at this point. You'll get pennies on the dollars for it, which is something we'll talk about with Phoenix as well, where it's like, what do you do? You have Maxey, but what are you going to do? Blow it up and get like maybe a first round pick for Joel, who was just the MVP like what last year?
2 years ago.
2 years ago. Yeah. So I was, you know, standing on the soapbox, screaming from the top of the rafters, do not give him the extension. But as we saw with the Luka trade, you got to extend him. You have to. It's the asset. You have to do it. But now they're in a tailspin. I don't know, because Joel's 7 feet tall, over 7 feet tall, and older than 30. And statistics would tell us that he's not going to get better. It's not going to get healthier. So
yeah, but his condition is not going to improve.
Yeah, his body's not going to improve. I honestly have no idea. Because Shaq had the same kind of rap of like he never comes in shape, but he still played.
Yeah, I was saying he missed time, but Shaq was like a force.
Yeah.
It's interesting. All right, moving along to that other topic. The Suns, Brennan, the Suns are in a free fall post the trade deadline, post All-Star break. You know, they didn't move Durant. They didn't move Beal. People thought maybe, you know, things will figure themselves out. But they have not. They have two wins in their last, like, 10 games, I believe. They are firmly outside looking in at the play-in. They're, what, four games back of the Mavs, who are at the 10th seed right now. Where do they go from here? They had that new owner sheen, that new owner smell where you come in, you pour all your money into everything. There's upheaval in the front, not in the front office, but in the coaching ranks and everything. You move on from Monty. I want to say you brought in Frank Vogel last year, then you fired Frank Vogel. Mm-hmm, yep. You bring in Budenholzer now, and Beal and Booker and Durant, which was the thing when all this happened. I said, this isn't going to help them because these are the most redundant skill sets of three players I've ever seen. Like, none of them are a true point guard, but they are good with the ball in their hands and they see the court really well, but none of them are true point guards. They're all really good shooters, but they don't take high percentage of 3-point shots. They all take a high percentage of mid-range shot, which is something you want from your top end players because it's a more difficult shot, but it's a shot that if you can get it with consistency, it'll definitely help your outlook. But if you're getting less threes than everybody else, that's really going to hurt you because your guys are taking more twos than everybody else. And I'm not a math major, but three is greater than two last time I checked. So what is the move here? Where everybody is assuming because they were shopping Kevin Durant during trade deadline that he's probably going to leave in the offseason via some type of trade or some sort. But where do the Suns as a franchise, where do they look at? What do they look like a year from now?
So there's a couple of things. One, you should have traded Kevin Durant. They should have traded him because while they're not having the best season statistically, he's having a fantastic season.
Well, he put the Knicks on the trade.
Yeah. But he doesn't have a no trade clause. There's only like three players in the league that have it. Who cares?
They respected their best player. That bodes well for you in the future when other teams are looking at you. Just, you know, throwing that out there.
No, 100%. But what I'm saying is from, you understand what I'm saying is from strictly.
Oh, I get what you're saying.
Business standpoint.
But I'm just, like they deferred to their best player, which in an organizational thing, when you're building something like that, like the Heat look worse for everything that happened with Jimmy and then sending him to Golden State, even though he said he didn't want to go to Golden State, even though he signed an extension with them. But the Suns look at least better because they didn't force Beal's hand. They didn't force Durant's hand. So,
no, that is true. But excuse me, I'm getting choked.
Doesn't help them one bit. Doesn't give you wins or anything.
No, so I think this season's going to be a wash. And that's the thing. I heard some people talking about like, well, if you put Beal on the bench, maybe it'll motivate him. Beal doesn't give a shit. Beal played in Washington and was just like, whatever. I don't care. I'll sign an extension.
Collecting these checks.
I'll get a no trade clause. Yeah, put me on the bench. Who gives a shit? So, yeah, I think this season is going to be a wash because KD, as I said, is playing statistically very well offensively. And I know they've been dabbling with the Beal as a starter, Beal off the bench. Booker obviously is their cornerstone piece. I just don't know because they dumped so they're in the second apron. So for anybody listening, because this whole new CBA is very weird. There's a lot of levels to it, but it's not like they can go out and get a buyout guy. They're in the second apron. They can't do any of that stuff. So they're stuck with the team that they have. And like you said, they're I think what, three games out of the play-in?
Four games out of the play-in.
So it's like, unless there's some miraculous, I mean, there's still 12 games left, I think, in the season. Unless there's some miraculous turnaround and they get into the play-in and then squeak their way into the playoffs, this is a lost season. Which is so crazy because on paper, if I said you have Booker and Durant and then Beal coming off the bench, I'd be like, that sounds like a pretty good team. But they just. Yeah,
if I told you you have a top 75 player on your team, a guy who was in the finals a couple years ago and, you know, people thought could be an MVP, and then a really, really good player who was a star on a team in the latter stages of his career, is like, oh, okay, I mean, eighth seed at worst?
Yeah, at worst, yeah.
Like, I kind of just described Golden State Warriors as well.
And turned everything around.
And they've turned it around after getting Jimmy. So, like, Steph is your top 75 guy. Jimmy is the guy who's just in the finals. And then Draymond Green, later stage of his career, but still contributing. Like, they're kind of the same thing. But the thing is, they have more defined roles, Golden State do. Curry is obviously, without a doubt, your leader. Jimmy doesn't shoot a lot of threes, but he's going to get you more stuff inside. And Draymond's going to do all the dirty work. He's a bigger guy. He's not a guard. They got three guards, and we're like, hey, figure it out.
Yeah, they're all playing. They're all playing zero. Like, they all have no pace. So it's not like one, two, and three. It's like everyone's just a zero. Like, everyone's just running point forward, basically, or you know what I mean? Like, it's like a weird situation to be in. And so I think it's a lost season, and I think Matt Ishbia has put this team, his newly bought in team, in a position where they cannot make any movement. This is the team. With the second apron stipulations, which turn into a third apron, you really can't do anything.
Yeah, you're stuck.
So I think this is the team, and they've got to figure it out. And I don't think this is on Budenholzer. He's a good coach. I think this is more of a, like you said, no defined roles. No, I think this is more player than it is coach.
I will quibble with Budenholzer as a good coach another day.
We don't have time.
We don't have the time.
Get all my takes in here.
Eagles
are overrated. Budenholzer's safe. Not a good
coach. Won the championship, whether you like it or not. The Suns can find their way in still because there's been a lot of injury at two of the teams in the bottom half of the Western Conference right now. The Mavs, like I said, they're still without AD, Gafford, and Lively. And the Kings just suffered an injury to either their one or second best player, however you want to define those. In Sabonis, a grade one hamstring injury. I can't remember how long he's going to be sidelined for it, but he's going to miss some significant time. And both of those teams could find themselves on the outside of the play-in, giving way for the Suns and potentially even the Spurs, not the Spurs, sorry, Wimby's out, even potentially the Blazers. The Blazers could, who have been hot and cold throughout the season, but doing better than a lot of people anticipated. A lot of people thought they would be like a nowhere team, a bottom two, bottom three team, and they've actually been playing competitive basketball for most of the season. And there's about 20 or so games left, not 12.
Is there 20?
Give or take for different teams and scheduling. Brennan, real quick, Debo Samuel's traded to the Washington Commies. How did you feel about this trade? Fifth round pick, I believe, or sixth round pick?
Yeah, they're going to have to pay him, though. I think it's a great trade for Washington.
He already got paid, so they just take the contract.
Basically. Yeah, they're just going to have to keep paying him. Jaden Daniels is on a rookie contract. This is what you do when you have a rookie quarterback. We've talked about it. As Joe and I have talked about it at length on the show, a lot of times it's the second contract where you're like, all right, this quarterback has experience. We're doing well. Jaden's kind of an anomaly to that only because he gained so much experience this last year going to the NFC championship game. I think I want to say this is a great trade for Washington, getting Debo Samuel. And it's not, you know, a fifth round pick. You're not selling the farm to get him because he is injury prone, especially later in his career. I think this stinks for San Francisco because all of that turmoil, all of this, like, we got to get this contract done, all this stuff with their receivers, and Debo's the leader in that receiver room. You get it done. What was that, last year or the year before? You finally get it done. Everything's taken care of. He's at market value. We're all good. And then all you get back is a fifth round pick, which, to be fair, there's, you know, wide receivers. We see a lot of them come out of the draft and end up playing really, really well. But I just, the team has a certain je ne sais quoi, as it were. It has a certain heart and soul. They're a hard-nosed team. This is how they play. And if you start getting rid of those players, all of a sudden you're like, what do we do? Like, what's happening? You know what I mean?
Well, we knew somebody was going to be a casualty for the eventual Brock Purdy trade that everybody's going to scoff at because he's going to get paid way too much. Yep. if I could zig here, I think this was not a good trade for the Commies.
Okay.
If you go back, if you go and look at Debo's stats over the last couple of years, they have been going down. His injuries have been going up because of the physical way in which he plays. And he is best utilized as not a receiver in the traditional sense. He is more of a everything guy. He can move around the field. He can go in the backfield. And his versatility is what gives him that type of value that he got for his contract. And I don't know. I can assume Cliff Kingsbury may use him in similar ways, but those have also contributed to why he's on the field less.
Yeah, it's kind of a double-edged sword because they have Scary Terry, so they don't need a number one. I think they want more of that utility player over there. But to your
point, I think they needed a solid number two, though.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. Instead of getting, that was the whole Percy Harvin thing. It's like, he's a gadget guy. Why don't you just go get a solid? You're not, go out and get Anquan Boldin. You don't need Percy Harvin.
And there's a reason, Percy Harvin couldn't be realized until he went to a team that had, a defined one, a defined two. And it's like, okay, we kind of get to play. It's kind of like the same thing. Debo, in a sense, is a luxury item.
Saquon Barkley.
Similar to Saquon. Yeah. Like, okay, the Giants could have him, and they're not going to know what to do with him because they don't have everything around him. But if a team has everything in place, then that player is able to flourish in ways that we haven't seen in decades. And then I think this was a move very similar to the old regime of the Commies. This was a very Daniel Snyder-esque move. The good thing is that they do have a lot of money, a lot of cap space. So they can make moves like this and gamble, take a little risk. But it only being a fifth round pick, hopefully he's in their system. And their assumption is, we could turn him around. We could, get some better productivity out of him. And, that bodes well for them. But I just don't believe this being their receiver too. I don't see it improving that much.
Yeah. Well, and I want to say for San Francisco, we've seen this movie before, all of us. Brock Purdy was Mr. Irrelevant, and then he was plugged into a team that had all of this talent, a great defense, George Kittle. They had all those receivers. Then they went out and got Christian McCaffrey, and everyone's like, wow, Brock is good. Statistically, he's a B.
He's a fine B plus. Yeah, he's fine.
He's a good guy. The problem is we've seen this movie before. Trent Williams is almost 40. Fred Warner is getting older. Bosa is starting to get hurt more and more like his older brother. All of a sudden, George Kittle is the same age as Travis Kelce, who everyone thinks is going to retire.
Oh, wow. Jeez.
Like, it's starting to get more and more like, hey, if all these pieces. And then
House of Cards, baby. House of Cards.
Bad Achilles.
He has no Achilles. I don't think he's ever playing again. I mean, I was on that train last year. He came back and then he was gone after two games. I think his career's over.
This is a slippery slope. All of a sudden,
we've got no updates on his injury status, by the way.
Oh, yeah, that's true, too. You start losing these pieces and it turns into a situation of like, we're going to see if Brock Purdy is worth that $60 million a year you're going to give him because he's not going to have anyone around him. In about a year.
Speaking of Sophie's Choices, another news item just came down. The Eagles are going to have to cut Darius Slay, Slay, as he prefers to be called. He doesn't like to go by his first name. They're going to have to let him go to free up some cap space. This is very interesting because we were in a similar place with him around this time last year. And it was assumed that he was going to go away, but they cut him and then restructured his deal basically to get him under the number. So I wonder if that is a potential possibility depending on who ends up leaving because we traded Hassan Reddick and that's why we were able to keep Slay after restructuring. So after seeing if Sweat or Milton or Bond, who we can retain, who will leave, what maneuvering, how he will pull off with that. So, but for right now, there's The report is that he will be cut by the Eagles. And then T. Higgins has been tagged for the second year in a row that just came down. That's a lot of money. I was about to say that's stupid because you're just paying him for a year instead of just locking him up. I don't see why you wouldn't just lock him up.
And that money's fully guaranteed, even if it doesn't matter.
Fully guaranteed, whether he plays or not. And you know, sometimes your hamstring isn't good when your money's not right.
It's weird how those things correlate.
It's weird how those things just happen to happen like
Matthew
that.
Matthew Stafford, they got worked out not going to the Giants.
Stafford got worked out. Rodgers is potentially going to the Giants now.
Yeah. For anyone listening, just real quick, the franchise tag, it's an average of the top five players of that position. Just pay them the money.
And there's like an escalator if you do it for more than 1 year.
Second year is the top two, I think. The average of the top two or top three, something like that.
And then like three is like
you
that
can't tag
plus
him after the second year. Or after the second year, I don't think you can. Or it's like so.
I think you can. It just becomes so astronomical. Like, why would you do it? Because that's what happened with Kirk Cousins.
Yeah.
On the Commies the first time where he got tagged again. And it's like, all right, if you tag him a third time, he's like half of your salary.
Yeah.
So they had to let him walk, and that's when he goes to Minnesota.
Crazy. Kirk Cousins has made $370 million in his career just for payroll. And it's all been guaranteed.
You'd be surprised how quick.
Quick, Mayman hits.
Legend at the bank. Real fast, only thing in hockey, because we're still winding down the seasons, but we're cutting close on time here. Very upsetting news just came down, and this is... If we want to talk about why athletes don't play hard during All-Star break or the Four Nations, Matthew Tkachuk for the Florida Panthers, out for the rest of the year.
No.
Out for the season. Groin injury suffered during the Four Nations Cup.
I know you feel some sort of way about that.
I mean, you know, P.K. Subban, go tell me how this is great for the game, but it sucks for the kids in South Florida who are rooting for this team.
All six of them.
So, hey, watch your mouth, all right? So that sucks going forward for us. We did pick up a win over the Calgary Flames the other day, and we traded Spencer Knight to bring in Seth Jones. I think that's going to that's in hopes to buoy us until the postseason, because it only says out for the regular season. So I guess the hope is maybe by the postseason he'll be ready to contribute in some way, shape, or form. That is very unfortunate. Very unfortunate.
Went to a Rangers game. Got to see some live hockey. Got to see my man, Steven Stamkos, the legend of Tampa Bay. Got to see him live and in person.
Oh, he's a Ranger now, right?
No, he's a Predator now. The Nashville Predators. Let me just say, I was heartbroken when they traded him. Maybe the timing
but
was
he looks
right.
old.
Maybe the timing was good. The Predators could not get anything going. Majority of the ice time was on the Rangers side. And Stamkos didn't hear his name called one time. So, it was rough. Time for everyone's favorite part of the show. We're going to go Fulham Corner. Let's go to Manchester United.
We are going to Manchester United. Look at Brendan knowing where we're going. Manchester United, we played at the Old Trafford, is what they call it. And this was the FA Cup game. Old Trafford. Old Trafford is the name of the stadium. But before we go there, we had a Tuesday game against Wolves, one of the bottom sides for a Premier League game, and we won 2-1, a goal by Ryan Sessegnon, who, if you've been tracking, he left, he came back. He's one of our own. He scored within the first minute of the game off an assist from Andrea Pereira. And then at the start of the second half, an assist from Adama Traore for Rodrigo Muniz to score. In this game, this FA Cup match, we hadn't beaten Man United for 117 years. 117 years or 117 games? I can't remember. In the FA Cup at their place or something. I don't know. A lot of weird things. Anyways, towards the end of the first half, corner kick, assist from Raul Jimenez, and a header put into the back of the net by Calvin Bassey put us up 1-0 going into the half. Coming out of the half, Bruno Fernandes got one, I want to say like in the 50th or 60th minute or so. And then it was just a dead heap from there. A couple of good chances from us, a couple of good chances from them, but nothing went down for the full 90. This is a cup game, so boom, we're going into extra time. Extra 30 minutes, 15-15, nothing out of that. So now we're going to penalty kicks. We had lost our Carabao match penalty kicks 16-17. We got outscored by one. Then this is the first penalty kick opportunity we've had since then. It was very nerve-wracking because pens always are. First three kickers for both sides put it into the net. Man U is kicking first. Fourth kicker goes up for Man U. Super Bird Leno in goal. He makes a save there. I think Anthony Robinson goes up. He kicks in the fourth goal for us. Their fifth man goes up. I think it's Zerky. It doesn't matter because he kicks it. Bird Leno makes another save, sends Fulham to the quarterfinals. Eight teams left. The quarterfinals of the FA Cup. The furthest I believe we've ever been in the FA Cup. The opportunity to grab a trophy this year is still available, and that would be phenomenal for the lads down in Southwest London.
Top 10 in the table. Also, there's no recognition for Fulham anywhere on any of the sites. It's all what's wrong with Manchester
United. Of course it is. Of course it is.
And we'll bring you the press conference in its entirety.
That's the story of my life, Brennan. The Nuggets win. The Nuggets beat the Lakers in the postseason, and LeBron hints at retiring, and then no one talks about us going to the finals for a week. It's just, is LeBron actually going to retire after getting swept? But anyways, Brennan, where can we find you?
At Brennan T. Comedy and on social media, BrennanTComedy.com. Check out the Bro Adjacent Tour. I'll be featuring for my good buddy Matt Fulcheron. We'll be in Connecticut, Boston, Florida, New York. I'll be in Los Angeles at the end of March. Come see me at the Riff Raff. All tickets available at BrennanTComedy.com.
I had a very cool opportunity lined up for you guys, but it actually didn't work out. I'll tell you afterwards. You can check me out on Twitter and Instagram at Joe Dorville and Blue Sky at Joe Dorville. You can check out this show's Twitter, Instagram, and Blue Sky at Kearing Press. Don't forget to check out all the other shows on the network. That is Who Does a Pod. That is A New Low. Don't forget to check out my merch at headphonejoe.etsy.com. No O, no E in the phone. And check out the music everywhere and anywhere you can find music. It's on YouTube. It's on Spotify. It's on Tidal. It's on Apple. Headphone Joe, no O, no E in the phone. Brennan, let's get out of here.
And that's why we play the game.
Hello.
Hello. Huge shout out, Timothy Chalamet. You're still my guy, bruh.
Goldman Domingo. Hell of a performance.
Amelia Pert. No, I'm just kidding.